In a world where heroes are often defined by their fame, wealth, or power, Norman Borlaug stands apart as perhaps the most impactful yet least recognized figure of the 20th century. His work saved more lives than anyone in human history, hundreds of millions by conservative estimates. When Borlaug received the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970, the committee chair stated he had helped to provide bread for a hungry world more than any other person of his age. Former President Jimmy Carter described him as accomplishing more than any other individual in history in the battle to end world hunger. Yet despite being named one of Time magazine's 100 most influential people of the 20th century, Borlaug remained remarkably humble, describing himself as only a catalyst in the global fight against hunger. His life's work, the Green Revolution, transformed agriculture across continents and prevented mass starvation predicted by many experts. The story of this farm boy from Iowa who changed the world offers a powerful reminder of how one determined individual can impact humanity through science, persistence, and unwavering dedication to a noble cause. Norman Borlaug's journey began in the Norwegian-American community of Saudi, Iowa, where he was born in 1914 to Henry and Clara Borlaug. Growing up on a 120-acre farm during the austere years before the Great Depression, young Norman developed the strong work ethic and connection to the land that would define his career. His grandfather Nels had particular influence on him, often taking him fishing and imparting wisdom that would guide Norman throughout his life. "Norm boy, your good deeds will be returned in ways you can never imagine," his grandfather would say in his Norwegian accent. Life on the farm was demanding but formative. Norman walked a mile and a half each way to attend the same one-room schoolhouse his father and grandfather had attended. In high school, he excelled in athletics under coach David Bartelma, becoming a champion wrestler and star football player. These early experiences taught him persistence and determination, qualities that would prove essential in his later scientific work. When the Great Depression hit during his high school years, Norman witnessed bank failures, farmers losing land, and widespread economic devastation. These experiences left lasting impressions that motivated his lifelong mission to combat world hunger. After graduation, Norman worked for a year to save money before pursuing higher education, encouraged by his grandfather's advice. "Get a university education. Get there, Norm boy, any way you can." With just over $70 saved, Norman set off for the University of Minnesota instead of attending Iowa State Teachers College as originally planned. To support himself, he secured housing for $1 per week and worked at the university coffee shop, earning meals in exchange for labor. Despite failing the university entrance exam, Norman's determination led him to the New General College, where he worked hard and eventually transferred to the College of Agriculture. A chance meeting with Dr. E.C. Stackman, head of plant pathology, changed Norman's trajectory when budget cuts eliminated his expected forestry job. With encouragement from Margaret Gibson, whom he had met at the coffee shop and would later marry, Norman pursued graduate studies in plant pathology instead of forest pathology, earning his master's in 1940 and later his doctorate while working at DuPont. This pivot from forestry to plant pathology would ultimately position him to tackle one of humanity's greatest challenges, world hunger. In 1944, while working at DuPont during World War II, Borlaug received an unexpected opportunity that would change his life and ultimately impact millions. George Harrer, a protege of Dr. Stackman, approached Norman on behalf of the Rockefeller Foundation to join a team of scientists addressing hunger in Mexico. The initiative was inspired by Henry A. Wallace, Roosevelt's vice president-elect and former Secretary of Agriculture, who had visited Mexico in 1940 and was appalled by corn yields of only 10-20 bushels per acre. Despite initial hesitation to leave his protected position at DuPont during wartime, Borlaug accepted the challenge with Margaret's encouragement. Upon arriving in Mexico, he found primitive facilities, limited resources, and a daunting mission: doubling Mexico's food production through technological transformation. The poverty he encountered in rural Mexico was shocking. Nutrient-depleted soil, widespread illiteracy, and pervasive hopelessness. Adding to these professional challenges, Borlaug received devastating personal news that his newborn son Scott had spina bifida and would not survive long. Though briefly returning to the United States, he eventually resumed his work in Mexico after Margaret and daughter Jeannie joined him there, leaving baby Scott in hospital care until his eventual passing. By March 1945, Haarer appointed Borlaug to take over the wheat program, setting the stage for his revolutionary work. Within a decade in Mexico, Borlaug developed three innovations forming the foundation of what would later be called the Green Revolution. The first was high-volume crossbreeding. Facing devastating wheat rust epidemics that had halved Mexico's harvest, Borlaug launched an unprecedented crossbreeding program. While most breeders made only a few dozen crosses each season, Borlaug collected thousands of varieties worldwide and began massive crossbreeding operations involving delicate hand pollination using surgical tweezers. By 1952, his log contained 6,000 individual crosses. This painstaking work eventually produced rust-resistant lines yielding 20 to 40% higher than previous varieties. His second innovation, shuttle breeding, was perhaps his most controversial and ultimately most impactful. Borlaug aimed to cut development time in half by growing two generations yearly. Summer crops in the high-altitude, rain-fed areas near Mexico City, and winter crops in the irrigated lowlands of the Yaqui Valley, 2,000 kilometers north. When told no wheat is planted here in summer because rain and heat and rust will kill it, Borlaug persisted. His experimental plantings thrived despite predictions, proving his concept viable. This approach challenged traditional breeding dogma by growing wheat in completely different latitudes and altitudes within the same breeding cycle. Despite opposition from project director Haarer and prominent plant geneticists who believed crops must be bred in specific locations, Borlaug remained adamant, even threatening resignation. The shuttle breeding yielded an unexpected bonus. Plants that survived both locations developed broad adaptability to different diseases, soils, climates, and day lengths, a crucial characteristic that would later enable the successful transplantation of Mexican wheat varieties worldwide. Borlaug's third innovation changed the wheat plant's architecture itself. Mexico's tall, slender wheat varieties couldn't efficiently use fertilizer. When fertilized, they grew too tall and fell over, limiting yields. In 1953, after searching through 20,000 wheat lines for shorter stems, Borlaug obtained seeds of Japanese dwarf wheat, Norin 10, from USDA breeder Orvo Vogel. By crossing these with his broadly adapted Mexican varieties, Borlaug created short, stiff-strawed wheat that tillered profusely, producing more stems and grains per plant. These new dwarf Mexican wheats, first distributed in 1961, doubled the national average yields within 7 years and could produce up to 9,000 kilos per hectare under ideal conditions. By 1956, Mexico had achieved self-sufficiency in cereals, a remarkable transformation that caught the attention of agricultural experts worldwide. The Rockefeller Foundation began extending its successful model internationally, and in 1960, Borlaug joined an FAO Rockefeller delegation studying wheat production problems across North Africa and Middle Eastern countries. Seeing potential for Mexican wheat varieties to address widespread hunger, he proposed a hands-on training program in Mexico for young scientists from these regions. This training program, which began in January 1961, became a model for knowledge transfer in international agriculture. Trainees worked 12-hour days across two wheat crop cycles, learning all aspects of wheat production. Borlaug also established international spring wheat yield nurseries, initially sending 50 varieties to 25 locations worldwide, eventually expanding to 150 locations. Within 3 years, data clearly showed the broad adaptation and rust resistance of Mexican semi-dwarf varieties, providing crucial information for launching aggressive crop production campaigns in Pakistan and India in 1965-66. In 1963, the Rockefeller and Ford Foundations established CIMMYT, International Maize and Wheat Improvement Center, as an autonomous international training institute with an international board of trustees and staff, making Borlaug director of its International Wheat Improvement Program. This position allowed him to realize his objective of training young scientists in research and production methods. The trustees mandated that all CIMMYT data and materials be available worldwide free of charge, a policy that would prove crucial in spreading the green revolution globally. Borlaug's teaching approach was practical and memorable. During a February 1967 visit to India, rather than focusing on impressive wheat plots at Pantnagar University, Borlaug deliberately sought out a disease-infested plot of disreputable appearance. Using this as a teaching moment, he launched into a warning about the dangers of pride and complacency, emphasizing how the shifty, changing, constantly evolving enemy, wheat rust, could devastate entire regions. He stressed that wheat scientists must remain vigilant, anticipate threats, and maintain breeding lines with alternative sources of resistance ready for multiplication if disaster threatened. By mid-1960s, the semi-dwarf Mexican wheats had gained such popularity among plant scientists and progressive farmers in India and Pakistan that guards with shotguns had to be stationed at the plots to prevent theft of the improved seed. Black markets for Mexican wheat seed emerged in both countries by 1964-65, a clear indication of farmer demand that would help drive the coming agricultural transformation. By the mid-1960s, a perfect storm of population growth and agricultural stagnation had created dire conditions in South Asia. India was receiving 5 million tons of emergency wheat grain aid yearly from the United States under the Food for Peace program, plus additional grain from Canada and Australia, the largest food rescue operation in history. Yet the famine was worsening. Malthusian thinking resurged among experts. The Paddock brothers published Famine 1975, writing off India as beyond hope, while Paul Ehrlich's The Population Bomb predicted food production could never keep pace with population growth. Even George Harrar, Rockefeller Foundation president, identified explosive population increase as the greatest threat to mankind after world conflict. It was in this climate of pessimism that Borlaug's high-yielding Mexican wheats began appearing in the Asian subcontinent. Borlaug arranged for wheat experts Glenn Anderson and Ignacio Narvaez to help implement projects in India and Pakistan, respectively. In 1964, with help from Mexican-trained participants, Borlaug's wheats were planted experimentally in both countries. By 1965, 250 tons of Mexican dwarf wheat seed were imported into Pakistan and 200 tons into India for wide-scale farm testing. The trials yielded exceptionally well, especially where Borlaug's cultural practices were followed. India's Minister of Food and Agriculture, Sri C. Subramaniam, recognized the wheat's superior quality and potential. Against conventional wisdom that agricultural progress in developing countries would be slow, Borlaug knew that even small-scale peasant farmers would adopt the new technology if given proper support, seeds, planting instructions, fertilization guidance, and pest control methods. His kickoff approach rejected the hypothesis that agricultural development necessarily had to be gradual. Despite mixed results from initial trials during India's 1966 drought, Minister Subramaniam made a courageous decision to import 18,000 tons of high-yielding seed. By March 1967, euphoric wheat fever had spread throughout the wheat-growing region. This enthusiasm was crucial because India hadn't yet committed to policies supporting small farmers' adoption of new technology as Pakistan had done. At a strategic luncheon with press present, Borlaug seized the opportunity to advocate for policy changes. He boldly stated, India needed fertilizer, 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 credit, 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 and fair prices, fair prices, fair prices. Later, in a heated exchange with Deputy Prime Minister Mehta, Borlaug bluntly warned that without policy changes to support fertilizer imports, credit for farmers, and fair grain prices, social and political disorder would follow. Despite Mehta's initial resistance about foreign exchange limitations, the meeting proved extraordinarily effective. Within 2 weeks, India announced dramatic policy changes regarding fertilizer imports and domestic production. Meanwhile, Pakistan was making similar bold moves. When they learned of India's 18,000-ton Mexican wheat import in 1966, they sent their Minister of Agriculture to Mexico to purchase seed. Through tense negotiations with Mexican farmer cooperatives, Pakistan secured 1,700 tons of the coveted white Mexipak wheat and 40,000 tons of red-grained Lerma Rojo 64, an unprecedented agricultural import. President Ayub Khan made bold economic policy changes to support the wheat campaign, committing to fertilizer imports, providing farmer credit, and guaranteeing market prices equivalent to international rates. With Dr. Ignacio Narvaez as advisor and strong government support, Pakistan launched a national wheat production campaign in 1966. By 1968, the results were remarkable. Fields planted with Mexican seed showed excellent yields across the country. The April 1968 harvest brought Pakistan to self-sufficiency in wheat production. By 1974, despite Paul Ehrlich's 1968 prediction that India would never feed itself, the country had become self-sufficient in all cereals. William S. Goud, USAID administrator, coined the term Green Revolution in March 1968, distinguishing it from the Red Revolution of the Soviets or the White Revolution of Iran. The name stuck, and Borlaug's agricultural transformation spread rapidly across the developing world. On October 20, 1970, Margaret Borlaug received unexpected calls from Oslo informing her that Norman had won the Nobel Peace Prize. Initially skeptical and thinking it might be a hoax, Margaret eventually became convinced and traveled to the Toluca Agricultural Experiment Station where Norman was working with six young scientists. When told of the award, Norman responded with disbelief. "No, no, that can't be, Margaret. Someone's pulling your leg." In her presentation speech, the Nobel Committee chair, Asse Lyonnais, stated that Borlaug, more than any other single person of this age, has helped to provide bread for a hungry world and had turned pessimism into optimism in the dramatic race between population explosion and our production of food. She described him as a dynamic, indomitable, and refreshingly unconventional research scientist who was not only a man of ideals, but essentially a man of action. In his brief acceptance speech, Borlaug emphasized that progress against hunger requires uniting food production efforts with population control. There can be no permanent progress in the battle against hunger until the agencies that fight for increased food production and those that fight for population control unite in a common effort. Following the ceremony, Borlaug delivered his Nobel lecture titled The Green Revolution, Peace and Humanity, summarizing his philosophy. If you desire peace, cultivate justice, but at the same time, cultivate the fields to produce more bread. Otherwise, there will be no peace. After the ceremonies, Norman and Margaret visited his ancestral homeland in Norway, where they were treated like royalty. Recognizing that the Nobel Prize categories did not include an award for food production or agricultural advancements, Borlaug later petitioned the Nobel Foundation to add such a category. When informed this was legally impossible under Alfred Nobel's will, Borlaug spent 3 years searching for a sponsor to establish a World Food Prize. In 1986, with support from his colleague Robert Havener, Borlaug secured funding from General Foods Corporation. However, when General Foods was acquired by Philip Morris, support was terminated in 1990. At this critical juncture, Borlaug met John Ruin, a self-made Iowa millionaire who had built a trucking empire from a single truck. Ruin embraced Borlaug's vision and became the prize's sponsor. The Ruin family created the World Food Prize Foundation with a $10 million endowment. The prize, now valued at $250,000, is awarded annually on or near United Nations World Food Day, October 16th, in Des Moines, Iowa, to recognize exceptional achievement in assuring adequate food and nutrition for all. Since its inception in 1987, laureates have come from around the world, recognizing achievements in plant breeding, pest management, microcredit, agricultural policy, and aquaculture. Norman Borlaug's work in China began in the wake of President Nixon's historic 1972 visit that broke two decades of diplomatic silence between the United States and China. Just 2 years later, Borlaug joined nine other American agricultural scientists on a month-long exchange visit sponsored by the U.S. National Academy of Sciences. Upon arrival in China, Borlaug recognized Liu Chen-ho, a former fellow graduate student from the University of Minnesota, among the Chinese greeters. Given the political climate during the waning years of the Cultural Revolution, Borlaug opted for discretion, exchanging only a subtle wink with his old colleague rather than an enthusiastic greeting. Borlaug returned to China in 1977, leading a wheat specialist exchange, and again in 1979 with CIMMYT colleagues. He noted stark differences between Soviet and Chinese scientific approaches. The USSR had held its scientists down under Lysenko, who caused the expulsion, imprisonment, even death of hundreds of scientists. By contrast, China became increasingly open after the Cultural Revolution, allowing their scientists to train freely at CIMMYT without constant supervision. Borlaug's influence on Chinese agriculture had begun even earlier when Pakistan supplied China with experimental Mexican wheat lines in 1966. By 1970, China purchased 5,000 tons of Borlaug's high-yielding wheat seed from Pakistan, sparking a revolution in spring wheat production. With just 7% of the world's arable land, China feeds 22% of the world's population, an achievement Borlaug calls one of the remarkable achievements of the 20th century. While China's agricultural transformation was largely successful, Africa represented a more challenging frontier. For nearly 20 years in his later career, Borlaug worked with farmers in Africa alongside former President Jimmy Carter and the Nippon Foundation of Japan in a program called Sasakawa Global 2000. Africa faces daunting constraints to agricultural development, including rural isolation, minimal irrigation, only 5% of cultivated land compared to 30 to 50% in Asia, frequent droughts, widespread human and animal diseases, and historical underinvestment in agricultural infrastructure. The initiative began when Japanese philanthropist Ryoichi Sasakawa asked Borlaug why there had been no green revolution in Africa. Despite initially claiming he was too old and lacked knowledge of Africa, Borlaug was convinced when the 13 years older Sasakawa insisted they start immediately. Borlaug organized a workshop in Geneva with about 50 experts, including former President Jimmy Carter. The partnership between Sasakawa Africa Association and Carter Center's Global 2000 program was formed, with Borlaug providing technical leadership and Carter helping in the policy arena. Starting in Ghana and Sudan in 1986, Borlaug assembled a team including former Mexican collaborators and young African experts. The program expanded to 15 countries, working through national agriculture ministries to help farmers test new food production technologies. Each participating farmer received technical support and inputs on credit to grow test plots using improved varieties, moderate fertilizer applications, and better cultural practices. Results were impressive, with yields 2 to 3 times higher than national averages, demonstrating the potential for an African green revolution. Recognizing protein deficiency in African diets, Sasakawa Global 2000 introduced quality protein corn, which contains twice the levels of essential amino acids, lysine and tryptophan, compared to regular corn. In Ghana, researchers developed a QPM variety named Opatampa, Good Nursing Mother, which has been widely adopted for making nutritious porridge for babies. Even in his later years, Borlaug remained focused on the future challenges of feeding humanity. He expressed confidence that Earth can provide food for up to 10 billion people, 6 times the population when he was born, if societies support continuous research in both conventional and biotechnology, while policymakers prioritize rural development. Borlaug identified the Cerrado region of Brazil as having tremendous agricultural potential, where new technologies have transformed 500 million acres of previously worthless acid soil savanna into productive farmland. This breakthrough has made Brazil the world's second largest soybean producer while reducing Amazon deforestation. Similar soil conditions exist in Paraguay, Bolivia, Peru, Colombia, and Venezuela, leading Borlaug to predict that South America is likely to replace North America as the largest agricultural production area in the world. He believed this technology could also benefit vast areas of sub-Saharan Africa, Indonesia, and Southeast China, though inadequate infrastructure remains a major constraint. While 20-30% of future food needs may come from expanding cultivated lands, Borlaug emphasized that 70-80% must come from higher yields through continued research and extension efforts. Borlaug argued that both conventional breeding and biotechnology will be essential to meet growing food demands, especially as crop yield increases have begun to decline while population grows by 80 million annually. He explained that humans have been genetically modifying crops for 10,000 years through selection, but modern biotechnology allows scientists to precisely transfer specific genes between distantly related species, a breakthrough beyond traditional Mendelian methods. This technology has already produced insect-resistant maize and cotton that reduce pesticide use, and herbicide-resistant soybeans. Borlaug dreamed of transferring rust immunity from rice to wheat and developing drought-resistant varieties. Despite opposition from environmental groups like Greenpeace, scientific bodies, including the National Academy of Sciences, have found no adverse health effects from genetically modified crops. Borlaug dismissed fears as ideologically inspired pseudoscience, stating emphatically, "Responsible biotechnology is not the enemy. Starvation is." Borlaug also dismissed the notion that organic fertilizers alone could feed the world. "Use all the organics available, but for God's sake, don't try to tell the world that we can produce the food that's needed without chemical fertilizers." He calculated that replacing today's 70 million metric tons of chemical nitrogen would require 4.7 billion tons of animal manure, quite a dung heap, requiring a 3- to 4-fold increase in livestock production. The additional land needed to feed these animals would be better used to grow food for hungry people. While Norman Borlaug's work transformed agriculture worldwide, his family paid a hefty price. With Norman frequently away and their children grown, his wife Margaret suffered from empty nest syndrome. She coped by reading extensively, taking historical tours of Mexico City, improving her Spanish, volunteering with organizations like Girl Scouts and the American Society, and teaching English to young students for 10 years. Despite these challenges, Norman later credited Margaret with instilling worthy values in their children and deserving most of the credit for how well they turned out. As he entered his 90s, Norman Borlaug reflected on his remarkable career with characteristic humility, describing himself as only a catalyst. His empathy for struggling people stemmed from his Iowa farm upbringing and experiences during the Great Depression, where he witnessed bank failures, farmers losing land, and hunger in cities. These experiences left lasting impressions that motivated his lifelong mission to combat world hunger. Borlaug identified 2 particularly gratifying achievements: seeing his Mexican wheat research spread with dramatic impact to major wheat-producing countries worldwide, and encountering former visiting scientists he trained in Mexico, now conducting good agricultural research and production in their home countries. He credited numerous mentors who influenced his life, including his grandfather Nels Borlaug, wrestling coach Dave Bartlema, college friend George Champlin, Professor E.C. Stackman, and George Harrar. Numerous institutions worldwide bear Borlaug's name, including the Norman E. Borlaug Center for Farmer Training in Bolivia, the Norman E. Borlaug Building at CIMMYT in Mexico, the Norman Borlaug Institute at De Montfort University in the UK with centers in Bulgaria, Czech Republic, and China, and the Norman Borlaug Center for Southern Crop Improvement at Texas A&M. In 2003, the U.S. Department of Agriculture established the Norman E. Borlaug International Science and Technology Fellows Program to continue his legacy. In Iowa, where every schoolchild learns about their hero of hunger, his boyhood home and one-room schoolhouse have been preserved by the Norman Borlaug Heritage Foundation. Established in 2000, the foundation promotes educational programs reflecting Borlaug's achievements and philosophy, particularly targeting youth who need heroes of substance. Perhaps most fitting to his legacy, Borlaug took particular pride in the Youth Institute established in 1994 as part of the World Food Prize. My original concept for the World Food Prize was for it to serve as a stimulus for young people to take an interest in food and population issues and go into related sciences, he explained. The program sends promising high school students on 8-week internships to research centers across Africa, Asia, and Latin America. With a sparkle in his eye, Borlaug observed how participants develop maturity and self-confidence, adding, "And some will go into international agriculture work." Even in his final years, Borlaug remained engaged with emerging threats to global food security. When a virulent new strain of stem rust called UG99 emerged in Uganda in 1999, later spreading to Kenya and Ethiopia, Borlaug developed a plan for international rust nurseries and committed personal funds to combat this threat. At a major meeting in Nairobi in September 2005, the 91-year-old Borlaug served as honorary chairman, working to rebuild the international wheat system he had constructed 50 years before. Despite challenges, Borlaug remained optimistic, stating, "Rusts recognize no political boundaries. To control rust pandemics, there is no alternative to international cooperation." Norman Borlaug's life and work embody the power of science, determination, and humanitarian vision to address one of humanity's most fundamental challenges, feeding a growing population. His legacy lives on not just in the institutions bearing his name or the billions of lives touched by his agricultural innovations, but in his enduring message that hunger is a solvable problem if we commit our knowledge, resources, and political will to addressing it.